So we have only 2 days left, maybe not even whole 2 days left. So it's good to go through the text. During the interview, I have found some of you were asking already questions related to the text. And so why don't we go through it together? Now I'm seeing we have many questions, so this is very good. We can start to have this course is coming to the second half. Maybe it will soon be over. Time is passing quickly, so we can have some discussion and benefit mutually from our presence. So I hope you give me more feedbacks and I can then explain according to your interest. Because the time in the interviews is very, very limited. Now, we have finished the first actually, I think all of you have already been to interview. Now, those of you who need a second interview, some specific questions regarding your practice. So, we will ask Sarah to hang some paper and you can sign for the interviews tomorrow and day after tomorrow also, no, possible. So we have 2 days. So those who need some guidance for the practice, some concrete questions would be better. So please, you can sign for the second interview. So you don't need to, but if you have some questions regarding your practice and how to arrange your practice, so please sign for the second interview. So this course has been concerned with shamatha, but we have also emphasized in the northern tradition we tend not to separate strictly the shamatha practice and the vipassana practice. But in order to get to the state of prashabdi, to the state of relaxation and clarity, to the state of pliancy, of course the shamatha practice is the must. But once this state has been attained, we do not need to wait until we realize directly the middle path. And we have explained the direct realization of the middle path is only possible when the object of, it is not object in the real sense, when we have the direct experience of nirvana, or if we take the non-dualistic approach to our meditation, of suchness. So we have also studied the Heart Sutra to a certain extent to understand the non-dualistic approach, in which all phenomena have only one characteristic, the characteristic of suchness. And the suchness is of course timeless. So it does not arise, it does not pass away. In this sense, it is not created. Everything that is created in the northern tradition, at least the tradition emphasizing the bodhisattva path, everything that is created, everything that is subjected to impermanence, and impermanence is everything that has mutual relation. That can only be a relative reality, that cannot be the highest reality. What is impermanent cannot be the highest reality. Why? From the point of view of this non-dualistic approach, the skandhas and so on, they are also actually concepts. That is very important to understand. And now we come to the text, and the peculiarity of this text, which is difficult to understand unless we see the whole thing, is that actually, according to this text, these 16 exercises which explain the practice of mindfulness as the base for realization, and it explained the mindfulness, the essence of mindfulness are the four foundations of mindfulness, and it explains them on the base of experience of the breath. Now we have learned these stages of familiarity with the breath. In order to get the realization, you have to be familiar with the breath, and the familiarity with the breath, actually in the Sanskrit, the term for these five kinds of training are the five familiarities. Sometimes it's difficult to translate, but you have to have these five familiarities to get liberation on the meditation of the breath. And we have explained the meditation on the breath is in the northern, southern tradition the full course of liberation, at least for the disciples. And this text is taken from the chapter explaining the path of disciples. In the path of the bodhisattvas leading to the state of anuttara samyak sambodhi, the highest realization. What is highest realization? Highest realization is dharmakaya. This is very important to understand. Those who study the Theravada tradition usually are not aware of it, because dharmakaya has different meaning in Theravada. Actually, in the northern tradition, the dharmakaya means suchness. And the perfectly realized Buddha is the one who, as we have said by very name, is the one who comes and goes in suchness. And the suchness actually does not go and does not come. So Buddha is, so to say, the dharmakaya, which is suchness. He comes and goes, but this coming and going is actually only illusionary. It belongs to this created body, but it does not belong to the dharmakaya. It does not belong to the dharma body, which is not created. You will find in Theravada similar ideas, but they are not explained. Like the Mahahatopada Sutta, the 28th of Majjhima Nikaya, the Shariputra explains that one who sees the Dharma sees the Buddha, one who sees the Buddha sees the Dharma, but they don't explain it in this way. Your Buddham pasati, so Dhammam pasati, yo Dhammam pasati, so Buddham pasati. But they don't explain that actually the Buddha is the Dharmakaya which does not come and does not go. This is typically only Mahayanistic. So the Dharmakaya is a synonym of suchness, it is a synonym of the limit of reality beyond which you cannot go. That is why we had this division into the Yavat Bhavikata, the reality as far as we can go in the world. That is knowing the self, own characteristics of the five aggregates, of the senses and so on. And the Yatha Bhavikata. Yatha Bhavikata means the reality of suchness. And impermanence is also suchness. The suffering of impermanence or insatisfactory state of impermanence rather is also suchness. The selflessness is also suchness. But impermanence is not a complete suchness. Why? Because nirvana is not impermanent. The unsatisfactory state is also not a complete suchness. Because the nirvana is not an unsatisfactory state. Only selflessness is suchness of all the phenomena. This is very important. And the selflessness is the synonym of emptiness. What is selfless is empty. What is empty is selfless. That already comes in the Northern tradition. In Northern tradition, even in the sutras, you will find the sutra of Paramata Sunyata, the Sunyata as the highest reality. You don't find the sutta in the Theravada, but it is there in the collection of Agama, of Nikaya, in the Northern tradition, at least as preserved in Sanskrit. So, this taking emptiness as suchness and as being the only reality is a natural result of studying the selflessness as being the characteristic of all the phenomena, whether it is nirvana or whether it is the phenomena subjected to the three times. And all phenomena that are subjected to the three times are the created phenomena. What is has past, present and future that has come from nowhere, emerged and goes again to nowhere. It was not there before and it has arisen. It has arisen and it goes away. This is our experience. And this experience presupposes emptiness. Presupposes the emptiness of cause and effect. And the real state of thing is a cause and effect which is, so to say, the secret of our experience. When we understand it, our experience makes sense. When we don't understand it, our experience cannot make sense. Because the cause and effect are neither same nor they can be different. Nor can they be both same and different, nor there can be come from nowhere. So in order, the peculiarity of this text, you will be very surprised, is that it explains counting, then it explains these objects of wisdom, And then it explained the 16 exercises as you find in the Anapana Sutta in a little bit different form, if you have noticed, as the path of meditation. In order to understand the Buddhist practice, it is not bad to learn a little bit of theory. Actually, in order to become a Buddha, you have to go through five kinds of marga, five kinds of the path. First, you have the path of accumulation of merit. If you don't have the path of accumulation of merit, you accumulation of merit means accumulation of the meritorious actions and of wisdom. They are wisdom is also merit. And among the meritorious actions also you have the jhanas. The practicing the jhanas is very powerful meritorious action. But it is still within the impermanence. So but only when you have this accumulation of merit, you can make the correct effort. So after accumulation of merit, you have the path of effort. Prayoga marga. Prayoga means effort. In the northern tradition, it is explained as the four kushala mulas, the four roots of merit. I will not expatiate because it is not that we would go away from the meditation on the breath. Later you can study. It is very fascinating how the same scriptures were interpreted in a different way in different traditions. And both are very, very true and logical. It does not mean that one is better than the other. They can be complementary. But we need the wisdom in order to understand them as being different ways of seeing the same process. So these kushala mulas, they are the roots of merit. They are the content of the correct effort. It comes from the scriptures. You will find in Majjhima Nikaya and in Samyutta Nikaya also. The Buddha explains that one who does not see the impermanence of all the phenomena cannot has no heat in this dharma. Has no warmth in this dharma. Having warmth in this dharma means that he can produce a fire. Because the process of enlightenment is like kind of compared to the fire, which burns the defilements. Defilements are burned by the fire. The fire of what? The fire of insight. So for that you need the warmth and you need to observe all the phenomena here on the base of breath, even in the process of counting the breath, you should be aware of it. Only then you can make a breakthrough. And all phenomena in Buddhism, they are summarized as being the five aggregates. The aggregate, there was also a question, the aggregate means skanda or khanda in Pali. Skanda actually literally means the shoulder. The direct translation of skanda means the shoulder. Why? Because people in the ancient times, you can still see in India and China, they wear the burden on the shoulder. And in Buddhism, we burden is bhara is the word for the self. Like in Christianity we carry the cross, in Buddhism we carry the burden of the five aggregates. The aim is, what does the Arahat do? Arahat, he is the one who frees himself from the burden of carrying the five aggregates. But while he is still alive, he still has to carry the five aggregates. When he dies, he will not carry them anymore because there are no causes and conditions for carrying them. The five aggregates explain nothing less and nothing more than the absence of self in our experience, because our experience is the five aggregates. When you see self in your experience, from the Buddhist point of view, to use the scriptures, you see like the horns on the head of the hare, and you see the hare on the turtle. You see non-existent things. So what is the difference between enlightened person and the non-enlightened person? Very important to understand. The enlightened person, unless he is an arahat or the pratyeka Buddha or the perfect Buddha, they are all three kinds of Buddha. From the point of view of northern tradition, very often the ultimate Buddha is only the Dharmakaya. But the arahat is the way to become the ultimate Buddha, the Dharmakaya. Not more than that. It is a skillful means, according to Lotus Sutra, so popular in China, in Tibet. This way to become an arahat is only skillful means. The Buddha has taught to understand the Dharmakaya. Anyway, because your reality is one. This is the approach of the Bodhisattva path. Now, these five aggregates, they are the burden, and one who carries the burden is the self. This is very important to understand. So you have to penetrate the illusionary nature of the self in the five aggregates. Otherwise, you have no way even of warmth in your practice, which can lead to the fire of insight. When you have warmth, then you can get to the top of seeing things in the world as they are, and then you have the acceptance of the Dharma. When you have acceptance of the Dharma, you can break through. And the acceptance of the Dharma is acceptance of the Dharma explain the non-self in Buddhism. And Dharma also explain the basis, the vastu. So as long as we are not enlightened, we have defilements, but they are avastuka. They have no base in the reality, because they belong to the self. Self is the object. Self is a base for the defilements. Now, when you become a sotapanna, or when you become a realized bodhisattva, the difference in this tradition is that you don't need to become a realized bodhisattva. This is very difficult. but you can get a very, very clear concept. That's why so much emphasis on logic, on clear thinking. You can get a very, very clear concept of what the Arahat experiences, what the Buddha experiences. But you don't become the Buddha. Why? If you become an Arahat, then you will not bring to completion the perfections which are necessary for becoming the Dharmakaya. And these perfections, they are based on this transcendental wisdom. The transcendental wisdom allows, even so you're not an Arahat, it allows you to stay in the world without suffering. You can stay in the world without suffering. Why? Because of the transcendental wisdom. And you don't leave the world because of the compassion. That is the great compassion. Great compassion has to root, have a root in the transcendental wisdom. Otherwise it is compassion but not a great compassion. This is very important to understand. So now back to the five aggregates. So there is no way to get real into the correct practice until you clearly see the non-self nature of the aggregates. So this non-self nature on the aggregate you can attain when you see very clearly that the form cannot be the self, the feeling or sensation cannot be the self, perception cannot be the self, the will formations cannot be the self, and that the consciousness cannot be the self, because they are all interrelated and appear due to causes and conditions. You can experiment on this with the breath. You don't need to use any other device. You can, when there is a touch, touch in Buddhism is its rasa, its function is to bring the aggregates together. When there is no touch, the five aggregates will not appear as such. But only when there is a touch, they will appear together. So you study the five aggregates on the base of the touch of the breath. And here comes a very important distinction we have made between the differentiated image and non-differentiated image. You use a differentiated image when your mind is sinking, when you have lethargy, when you have no clarity, to bring the light into the mind. Light into the mind comes from the clear object and clear mind. Clear object and clear mind comes from clear differentiation, right? This is the in Buddhism it is called the Dhamma Vichaya or Dharma Pravichaya. According to the path of the disciples, there is no way to abandon defilements except the Dharma Pravichaya, except the investigation of the Dharmas. When you see dharmas, you don't see the self, because the self is not an existing dharma, not an existing phenomenon. So in Theravada also we distinguish between the existing concepts and the concepts which are there, but they do not exist in reality. And the self is concept which exists but not in reality. Because however you investigate the content of your experience, you will not find any lasting core which presupposes a seer or a feeler or a doer, an agent separated from these five aggregates. This must be a very clear experience to go deep into meditation, because we have explained this prashrabdhi means clarity and relaxation you will only get when you understand clearly the importance of detachment. The other traditions also practice jhana, but jhana is not any Buddhist practice. In the time of Buddha, jhana was very common. It was in a way part of education in India. You had to remember the Vedas. In order to remember the Vedas, you had to have a powerful memory, and to train the powerful memory, they practice the jhanas. So it was in a way part of the education. Education was by hearing, no? And hearing in samadhi. When you read the scriptures, you will be amazed that some disciples, they hear the discourse and become enlightened, become arahat. Why? Because they hear in samadhi. Their mind and the content of the speech, they merge into one. So they realize. There is a, I should sometimes tell some nice stories to make you happy. There is a very nice story in the commentaries of the Dhammapada. The Buddha is speaking to four lay people. Dharma. They sitting under the tree. Now one is listening in ecstasy, very, very concentrated. The other one is catching the branches and playing with the branches. Another one is digging in the earth. Another one goes deep into the earth. And Buddha, he has three kinds of mindfulness. Here not four mindfulness, but three mindfulness. He, among them, is whether he has equanimity, whether you, if somebody rejoices as his dharma, he is equanimous. If somebody does not care about his dharma, he is equanimous. Because what he speaks is just truth. And you accept it, okay. You don't accept it, okay. We, when we speak well, we may be very pleased, but not the Buddha. So they all listen. Now, after the Buddha finishes the discourse, he goes away, and Ananda follows him and asks him, please, teacher, why this one was listening in such a deep concentration, the others were playing around. What was the causes? What was the reason? Then he said, the one who listened with a deep concentration, he indeed became enlightened. He is a sotapanna. The one who was playing with the branches, he has been monkey in many, many lives before. So this vasana, this habit, was so strong he could not understand anything. The other one, he was a pig in many, many lives before, so it was very difficult for him to grasp what I was saying. And the last one, he was an earthworm, huh? So he's very, still very deep in the earth. So we react according to our habits, according to our vasanas. Huh? Vasanas literally means perfumations. According to Yogacara, our world is nothing but these perfumations in our mind, which what we see is nothing but our perfumations in the mind. Why? Because the same object, we different types of beings, science also now is confirming this. We believe that what we see is objective, but it is not objective at all. So different classes of beings see things in a different way. The same river is experienced in a different way by fish, a different way by animal, different way by man, different way by gods, different way by beings in the hell, different way by the pretas, by the hungry ghosts. But it is the same water. Now the science also says we believe we see this, everybody sees the same color, but no, the fly sees the colors very, very differently. Who is right? No one is right, and causes and conditions. And this is all that there is in the world. And these causes and conditions, according to Yogacara, have the base in the mind. In the mind, in form of the seeds, bijas of our previous experiences. And they formulate as the objects that we experience. Anyway, the objects that we experience are the five aggregates. And we are seeing the world as long as we have not dissolved the illusion of the self. We see, we experience the defilements on the base of the self. I am this, I am that, I should be like this, I should be like that, I am good, I am bad. And that's why these defilements last for a long time. Because they have no base in reality. Now, if one has dissolved illusion of the self in the aggregates, then defilements will be there, but they don't last because they connected. Defilements are defilements, but there is no bearer of defilements. That is a wisdom. The defilements are just causes and conditions. When the causes and conditions change, the defilements go away. Even incredible amount of defilements can go away through deep insight. Those who know Buddhism know the story of Angulimala, who killed 999 people. What a load of karma. But when he was very intelligent, very deep concentration, when the Buddha has taught him, immediately he could attain. Does it mean that he has no more load to carry? Of course, he still will experience the result of his karma, but he is detached from the karma. This attachment to the five aggregates creates the powerful karma. But when there is no more grasping at the self of the on the five aggregates, then the karma will become light. This is the process of meditation. And the karma will only become light when we investigate these five aggregates. Here on the base of the breath. Now, when you understand the five aggregates, you have the warmth, so you can understand the dependent origination. And the dependent origination also we can study on the base of the breath. That is why even this counting of the breath according to the Anapana Sutta, we have explained before, explains the satova asasati, satova pasasati. He breathes in with mindfulness, he breathes out with mindfulness. Right? This is the explanation of counting. So, when you really breathe in and breathe out with mindfulness, you can actually experience at the place of the touch of the breath, when you change your reflected image from non-differentiated to the differentiated, you will investigate with clarity that there is no anything in the touch that really stands, that has own nature, own essence. Everything is changing in the touch. The sense, the touch is changing because the elements are changing, the sensations are changing because the objects are changing, the perception is changing because the objects are changing, then how you relate to this is changing because these formations of body, breath is the formation of the body and the formation of the mind, the sensations and perceptions are formations of the mind, their very nature is always changing, so that mind which distinguishes all this and which goes to all this, the formations, it's also always changing. So when you experience better concentration, you experience happiness, if you have this insight, you can detach from this happiness. And then you will go deep into meditation, be it the shamatha or be it the vipassana. This is important to understand. So when you have attained by shamatha some more subtle sensation, more subtle object, you preserve the clarity of this object, do not let this clarity disappear, because you apply the differentiated image whenever you losing the clarity of the object. And this can happen even in jhana. In jhana you still may have with our weak mastery, you may still have the moment of sinking mind. So you differentiate the five aggregates and you will have clarity in the mind. Clarity comes from clear differentiation. That brings a light into the mind. Hmm? Then this knowledge of the five aggregates naturally on the base of the breath naturally leads to the familiarity with the dependent origination. Here it's called training, but actually it means familiarity. Why familiarity? Because this what he calls engagement or training actually leads to the breakthrough when you breathe in and breathe out mindfully. So then you use these 16 exercises to master the path of meditation. So there are five paths to become a Buddha: the path of accumulation of merit, the path of right effort, the path of seeing. Path of seeing means seeing what? Seeing the object of liberation. However you call it, nirvana, or you call it the suchness, ultimately it is not really different. Only the understanding is different. Then the path of meditation. Meditation in this is why the study of languages is so important. We say meditation, but in Pali or in Sanskrit they say bhavana. This is how the study of languages really helps. Meditation is a very vague translation which does not convey the real meaning. Bhavana is from the Sanskrit root bhu, to become. So to study meditation means to becoming meditation. To study shamatha means to become shamatha. To study vipassana means to become vipassana. The real meaning of meditation is becoming. Becoming what? Becoming the Buddha. You meditate to become the Buddha. How you become the Buddha? By becoming shamatha and vipassana. And by cultivating all the virtues which will deepen the shamatha and vipassana. The shamatha cannot come without its friends. The vipassana also cannot come with its friends. They all together, what are the friends? Mindfulness, right effort, faith. If they are not very, very functioning in a correct way, then what shamatha, what vipassana, it will not be there. So now the dependent origination is what the Buddha has realized under the Bodhi tree, and you can study also on the base of the breath. Dependent origination actually means the law of cause and effect. Everything that is changing, the five aggregates, the world, is subjected to the law of cause and effect. So this breath is also subjected to the law of the cause and effect. And this cause and effect, they, as Visuddhimagga also explained, they are neither same nor really different. If you conceive them as the same, does not make sense. If you conceive them as a different, it also does not make any sense. And this is the essence of our experience. Everything we experience, what we experience, is cannot be grasped in terms of the so-called four gotis, four extremes. It is not, and it has arisen spontaneously without a cause. None of this makes any sense. But our experience is not senseless. It has very deep sense only when we penetrate the law of selflessness, the law of emptiness. Selflessness is a synonym of emptiness. That which has no self is empty of any lasting essence. And that which has no self-lasting essence, that cannot be really grasped. That cannot be really attained. But it can be understood. This is a paradox. It cannot be attained, but it can be understood. And how it can be understood? On the way, on the base of the breath, the text explains. I see the time is over and we have many, many questions. We will continue tomorrow. We will hopefully have a better understanding how everything is interrelated. You cannot, strictly speaking, separate shamatha and vipassana. And that which connects them together, that is precisely the mindfulness. Mindfulness is a base for both shamatha and vipassana. By practicing mindfulness, we are practicing both shamatha and vipassana. So, in a Buddhist tradition, the mindfulness is the base for understanding what is the difference between the kusala and akusala, the wholesome and unwholesome. If there is no mindfulness, we don't understand. And the real wholesome is that, according to this definition, which is free from mental perversion. Seeing permanent in impermanence, seeing a lasting satisfaction in that which is impermanent, seeing self where there is no self. That is the root of the wholesome, of the real wholesome, based on the right mindfulness. We have wrong mindfulness and right mindfulness also. The wrong mindfulness is a base for wrong samadhi. The right mindfulness is a base for right samadhi. And the right samadhi, whether shamatha samadhi or vipassana is also samadhi. Samadhi of seeing momentariness. Both are based on the mindfulness. That brings the awareness into the mind, and awareness illumines the hidden defilements. Then they can be removed. So, shall we go to the question? We have no time for, no need for break, or you want some break? No need, huh? So let's come to question. We may not cover them all, but at least some. Kaya Sakhi, body witness. I don't know what is meant by that, but anyway, he is not here, temple, no? I don't know what he means by that. Kaya Sakhi, you know that word? It means that you experience all these liberations by your own body. Huh? What suggestion do you have for keeping focused on the anapana spot when not in sitting meditation? When you go to Burma, when you go to Thailand, they teach you quite often when you meditate on the breath to keep your attention on the breath while walking, to keep your attention on the breath while eating, always to pay attention to the breath. But this is not very practical in the daily life at all. This you can do in a monastery, but if you live in and you have to do all kinds of daily tasks, you have to go on driving and you have to do things like that, it is not practical. So in this sense it's much better to keep the Zen kind of mindfulness of being completely there in what you're doing and keeping the mind empty. This is much more practical for daily life. That's why the people who study the Mahayana, they don't, if they study correctly, some also study very incorrectly, they have not much difficulties to work in the society, get mixed with the people, get mixed with all kinds of situations. But the people who practice like that, always the focus, attention, and they have great difficulties in. So to be functional in normal situations. So if one practices like that, one has to stay in the forest. Then this script, I am not quite clear. Can you help me? Oh, sorry. Can you help me reading it? Christine.
Please explain emptiness
and form. Please.
Please explain emptiness and form.
Emptiness and form. Well, we have explained it already many times. In a non-dualistic approach to meditation, there is only one reality. There are not two realities. This is not explained so clearly in the Theravada. You have like Chula Sunyata Sutta, which explains the emptiness is always emptiness of something. When this room is empty of people, then it is empty. Then if you practice meditation, the first dhyana is empty of the five hindrances. The second dhyana is empty of vitaka and vichara. This is the meaning of the emptiness in the Chula Sunyata Sutta. But this emptiness is not the non-dualistic approach to emptiness. The emptiness is can be misunderstood. The emptiness in our language normally means something is missing. If I tell someone in America that I feel empty, he will tell me, well, have a glass of beer, never mind. So the emptiness actually has a meaning of fullness. Why? Because all the phenomena are empty, starting with the form. I have dropped. So there cannot be a form different from emptiness. There cannot be sensation different from emptiness. If it is different from emptiness, then it cannot change, because it will have so-called self-existent nature, svabhava. But nothing has self-existent nature in our experience. That is Buddhism. So this aspect is very important. So emptiness has the aspect of the created and also the aspect of the non-created, because everything is selfless. Nothing has self-existent nature. Thank you for your sharing of your wisdom. My question is, does the body hold memories similar to the mind? Can memories also be separated into the elements? Or do the elements form mentalities? So according to Yogacara, I have already explained, we have the so-called store consciousness. The store consciousness preserves or stores the seeds of our previous experience. Mental experience, bodily experience, all experiences. And it holds to them. That's why it is called alaya. Alaya basically means sticking to something. Another word for Buddha in the Buddhist tradition is analayo. Analayo means without abode. When you become, there are also verses in the Dhammapada, arahat is analayo. He has no abode in this world. Now we store these experiences by the body and the mind, and they are, when we hold to them, they are our abode in this world, because we stick to them. And we interpret the reality on the base of them. And in the non-dualistic philosophy, I don't want to talk too much about it, from this alaya appears the idea of the subject and object. In other words, like the, what do you call this, slime? Who has these two antennas?
Snail.
But there is this long one, it's not snail.
Slug.
This is slug. I mix them together, snail and slug. Both have these two antennas, right? So when there is a touch, and you, so these two antennas appear. These two antennas, they are the seer and the seen. And the alaya consciousness would be that one which witnesses it and sticks to it as being something different. And from that then arises the whole process of cognition. So when there is a touch, there will appear these two antennas, the seer and the seen. And they, so to say, they are produced from the karmic consciousness. And the karmic consciousness gives us the idea of the object and subject being separated from each other. So it is not the elements that form the memories, but it is these perfumations of the mind. They are called in also anushayas, that latent energies in the mind, which then hold the memories of the past experiences, also the bodily and also the mental. Because the body without the mind is the dead body, no? One last question. Why wood and metal are separated from earth element? Oh, this is a Chinese medicine. This is very different. Please don't confuse. Don't confuse Chinese medicine and the Buddhist theory of the elements. They are not the same. So in these five elements, they exist in Chinese medicine, and in a way philosophy is also based on medicine. But not in in India, the metal or wood, they are not separated from the earth element. They are earth element because the hardness is most prominent in them. Could you please explain more the path of seeing, the path of meditation? Does one need to fulfill both to realize the truth? Well, the truth is realized step by step. There is a very important sutta in the called the Ratha Vinita. Maybe you have heard the rally of the chariots. In the Majjhima Nikaya, the whole structure of the Visuddhimagga, which is the most important scripture on meditation in Theravada, is based on the sutra Ratha Vinita, rally of chariots. This is a conversation between two great minds, the wise Shariputra is asking and the other one, what is his name? Now it come later, will come to my mind. Anyway, he compares the process of attaining, becoming an arahat, of becoming a Buddha, by rally of chariots. So it's to become a Buddha is to become purified. But you don't become purified at once. You become purified step by step, but these steps, they cannot be separated. They are an organic process. So if you want to have the purification of by concentration, you need first the purification by sila. If you want to have the purification by analyzing the nama rupa, you cannot do it unless you have the purification by concentration. When you have the purification by understanding the nama rupa, you get the purification by understanding the what comes next, the today I'm tired. Nama rupa leads to the dependent origination.
After the nama rupa.
Are you sure? It comes next, the dependent origination. I don't think so. It is. No. Karma? No. No. This is a different aspect. I think she's right. Dependent origination, after dependent origination, you have the purification by now for a long time I have not been teaching the Visuddhimagga. You have the purification by cause and effect, you have the purification by this is a whole system, step by step. You can, you need the one chariot to, like, suppose you go from, I think, from Savati to Saketa, or from Rajagaha to Saketa, then you cannot go by one horse. You need one horse, then you change the horse, and you get another horse, then 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 you will come to Saketa. Then in Saketa they will ask you, did you come here by this horse? That is the jnana dasana, seeing by knowledge. Before the jnana dasana, that is the last of these seven knowledges, you have the knowledge of, never mind, it will come after some time. So you attain the seeing by knowledge by having attained the other knowledge, then you will attain the previous that knowledge by attaining the previous purification. Knowledge is purification. Then you come step by step, and they cannot be separated. The one leads to the other. If you separate them, you don't understand meditation, because meditation is the organic process. In this organic process, you need to master the sila, samadhi, and wisdom. When you have reached the end, the saketa, then the sila, samadhi, and wisdom, they will become perfect. And this is a state of an arahat. What is the difference between arahat and us? The arahat has five aggregates of liberation. And we have the five aggregates of clinging. That's why we are likely to be reborn according to our clinging. to a good state, if it is good clinging, bad state, if it is bad clinging. But the arahat, he has not aggregates of clinging, he has aggregates of liberation. Buddha is also arahat, he has also aggregates of liberation. The liberation by sila, it means a complete sila. When he has a complete sila, he may do some small transgressions, but it will not affect his perfect sila. Then he has the aggregate of concentration, which is the liberation by concentration aggregate, the wisdom liberation aggregate, then the liberation aggregate and knowledge of liberation of aggregate, five aggregates of liberation. That's why for him, bye-bye samsara, no more. For those who have the aggregate of grasping, samsara, continuity is there. But for those who have aggregates of liberation, there is no cause for being reborn. So the king of death is circulating around and does not find him. So he is very, very angry and goes away. This is how it is explained. Nothing to grasp there. So he is beyond the death. To be beyond the death means to beyond the clinging of to the aggregates. That means being free from defilements. Okay, so this rally of chariots explain that the meditation is organic process. You cannot separate sila from training in sila from training in samadhi. You cannot separate training in samadhi from training in wisdom. When one becomes liberated, then the three merge together and become complete. This is the meaning. So you cannot say that you have gone there due to the aggregate of sila, to the aggregate of samadhi, or to the aggregate of wisdom. They are all purification. But you say, having mounted on that, you have attained that. Having mounted on that, you have attained that. Having mounted on that, I have come here to Saketa, which is the here symbol for Nirvana. It is as simple as that. That is Patipada Jnana now starts to remembering. So, okay. Anyway. Let's see next one. From the text, by observing impermanence, one engages in vipassana. Does observing mean contemplating or experiencing the reality? Well, you can say that for sure, because the meditation of meditation on shamatha is basically meditation on the concepts. But for the northern tradition, even the five aggregates are the concepts. So in the same text, you have, after explaining these four objects of meditation, he explains also these different means of meditation. And you have the five objects which purify the conduct, and five objects which are skillful means. And they both, objects which purify the conduct and the object which are objects of skillful means, you both can, you can take them as training in shamatha and training in vipassana also. Why? Because they can become also even the five aggregates, even the dependent origination can become object of shamatha. This is the difference. You can make them, even these different mental factors which form the mind, they can become the object of shamatha. You can get the fourth dhyana meditating on mindfulness. Why not? When it becomes a concept, you concentrate on it, off you go into jhana. So you cannot strictly separate the vipassana and shamatha. Depends how you put things into the mind. So the reality, of course, is the impermanence. But we put the reality into the mind as concepts. And according to this Yogacara, I don't want to give you too many philosophical, there are three realities. Not just two, conventional reality and the highest reality. There are three realities. There is a reality of dependent origination, which is the reality of the mind. But on this reality of the dependent origination, we impose the reality of what they call parikalpita, which is fabricated. Our understanding of the dependent origination is not the direct understanding, but understanding through concepts. But the concepts, the names, they have no reality of their own at all. They have no reality of their own. When you separate the concepts, the names, the sentences, the syllables from the reality, then you can get the reality free of concepts, free of thinking. And that reality is the ultimate reality, which you cannot grasp. This is also not a dogma, it's a skillful means, but very useful skillful means to explain that we, for us also, the dependent origination, it becomes the concept to grasp, but it is not a concept. It is a reality which is without a concept. And this brings a deep understanding. So it is compared to the eye with a disease. Or it is compared to the seeing the rope as a snake. The rope is not the snake. But we see a rope as a snake. But when you realize that rope is a rope, then this idea of the snake, something which is not there, will disappear. So the what we cling to is not the reality, it's our concepts of the reality. That is very important aspect in understanding this yoga. And you need concepts to understand the reality, but the reality is not a concept. Seeing the reality as it is like seeing by the healthy mind. And the reality as it is the reality of the no essence whatsoever. And that is the reality of the mind. The mind is the world we experience. This is also skillful means, but for meditation this skillful means is very, very useful. Because it brings us to the understanding of our understanding of the world as being the understanding through the concepts. The Buddha says, the world argues with me, I don't argue with the world. Whatever the wise men in the world consider as good, I also consider as good. What they consider to be as bad, I also consider as bad. I don't argue with the world. The world argues with me. So the world is a mind, and mind is empty of any self-existing nature. The self-existing nature is brought to the mind by our concepts. This is the skillful means of Yogacara. So in this tradition it is very important to practice a deep concentration, to go into the state of non-thinking. Then you know that what arises in the mind is just fabrications. Anyway, do the Northern School connect with the same experience of Nibbana as the Southern School? Well, there are different ideas, so many different schools. Generally speaking, for the Madhyamika, the nirvana of the disciples and the nirvana of the Buddha is the same nirvana, only its use is different. But for the Yogacara it is not the same. So there are differences in the viewing. Why it is not the same? Because mind, the real mind is the Dharmakaya. The Pali Sutta describes the ninth jhana, where Vedana and perception cease. Is this the same as contact with Nibbana? No, it's not the same. And the Nibbana you cannot contact, impossible. That's why it is Nibbana, because you cannot, it is not a normal object. All the other objects you can contact, but not Nibbana. That's why the door to Nibbana is emptiness, signlessness and desirelessness. You cannot contact these three. And the emptiness you get through meditation on, they are interconnected, they cannot be separated. But meditation on the selflessness, the signlessness you get on the meditation on impermanence, and the desirelessness you get on the you got through samadhi meditation on, the non-satisfactory nature of the impermanence, the three. This is only explanation also, but they are because they become one once the nirvana is experienced, and they cannot, the emptiness you cannot touch, the desirelessness you cannot touch, and the signlessness also cannot be touched. So this ninth jhana is the jhana of cessation of perception and of vedana, of sensation. And this jhana is the deepest jhana in the Buddhist tradition. And it is based, not based on the suppression, but it is based on wisdom. And in wisdom, the subject and object become nirvana. When you have experienced that, then you have complete grasp of Buddhism, nothing to grasp inside and outside. So now the last question: what does it mean to experience the mind? It feels like for me stepping back from the in and out breathing in tetrad, I do move spacious, open awareness.
What does it mean to experience the mind? It feels like for me stepping back from it, from in and out breath in tetrad one, to move
in
to a more spacious and open awareness.
In tetrad one?
In tetrad one, to a more open.
What means tetrad one?
The first tetrad in the Anapanasati Sutta. I think. Want me to read the rest?
Okay, please read. First tetrad. Tetrad means three, huh?
In tetrad to a more, tetrad one to a more spacious and open awareness.
Tetrad, which tetrad?
The first tetrad. The first one.
Wait, what is the tetrad here?
In the Anapanasati Sutta.
What does he mean?
The first tetrad, the first four steps, I think.
First four steps. Huh?
The first four steps.
Which four steps?
You don't have to do this now if you don't want. You could just answer, what does it mean to experience the mind? What I was saying was, as you go through the series, the sequence, it seems like
which
there's
sequence?
Less awareness of breathing.
Which sequence do you talk about?
In the 16 steps, as you're progressing through them, it felt when you got to. I was wondering what experiencing the mind, if you could talk a bit about that, because I felt like it involved a real change in awareness of the breath. It was like a stepping back into a much more open awareness.
Do you mean the citta anupassana? Or what do you mean?
experience.
But citta anupassana is analytical. You start by differentiating the mind with raga and without raga, with dosa and without dosa, with moha and without moha, the superior mind, the inferior mind. What do you mean?
Can you just answer what it, when we get to the place in the Anapanasati Sutta, I think it is step number 9 where you experience the mind.
Yes, you experience the mind by analyzing it.
Oh, okay.
It is not something you don't differentiate. No? It is by differentiation. If you study like in Paok, you play, you become a player on the stage and you produce a mind with, you sing of something you want, you sing of something and now that you are detached, you sing of something you dislike, and this is how you practice. So you play with the mind and you are like like a player on the stage. You can call it also spacious mind. But also you, in the daily life, you become aware of is there attachment or is there not attachment? Is there a resistance or is there not resistance? Is there delusion or is there not delusion? Is it the inferior mind or is it a superior mind? This is how you, is it liberated mind or not liberated mind? Liberated mind here means the mind free from 5 hindrances. It does not mean nirvana. And is it the concentrated mind or is it a distracted mind? And actually how you practice in fact. You need the samadhi and you induce these states to see that actually you are like a player on the stage. There is a very wonderful sutra in the northern tradition called Lanka Avatara, which explains the descent on Lanka, not the Ravana story and the Hanuman story, but it has to do with Buddha. Buddha, according to legend, also went to Lanka. And it is said that the mind is like the actor on the stage wearing a mask. In the old India, like in Greece, the actors, even in China, the actors wear the mask, and this mask expresses his role. So the actor wearing a mask on the stage is like the mind. This mask means the self. Actually, in strangely enough, in Latin, persona means the mask. This is very wonderful. Persona, real meaning of persona in Latin means a mask. So the person, the mind, is like a mask. When a spectator sees through the mask, the actor becomes shy and goes to the background. So you are playing with the mind which is grasping, you are playing with the mind which has resistance, you are playing with the mind in samadhi, you are playing with the mind which is distracted, you are playing, so you have to know all kinds of mind. And all these kinds of mind, finally, they are like roles we have in the world. When this, it is discovered that there is no self behind these roles, then the player becomes shy. It's a wonderful comparison, huh? Finally, whatever we can grasp and believe that it belongs to the self, it is like a mask we put. And this is what is so wonderful about meditation on the mind. You produce these different states of the mind and observe that they are all fabricated by the mind. And this brings a very deep insight. And it perfectly fits into the Yogacara picture. Mind is the producer of bondage and the producer of liberation. But it has no ego. There is no person who thinks, but there is thinking, definitely. Okay, so let us do some meditation. And then we do the chanting as usual.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.